I could see the question perfectly. How the fuck did I have it so well hidden?
It's time,
he said, nodding out the window to all the cameras waiting just outside a pair of black iron gates with a C in the center. I hadn't even noticed that we had arrived. And now, all the Callahans and the media were waiting on us. Sliding the hem of my dress up, I slid the knife back into its holster, only to find Liam trying to burn a hole through me with his gaze. I killed the last man who looked at me like that. I said, waiting to see the disgust at my words, but instead I only saw more lust. He was getting excited. And the last thing we needed was that imprint. For the love of God, control yourself, Callahan. Your mother, the woman who whipped your ass as a child, is waiting for you. That did it.
Troy, not to be a bitch,
he snapped as he tapped on the window, signaling the driver to open the door. The moment it did, camera flashes assaulted us. Liam pulled me closer to him, his arm around my waist, and I used the opportunity to try to fix his sex hair. He kissed my cheek when I was done, causing reporters to throw as many questions as possible at us. I wanted to flip them off, but Liam squeezed my hand, and I smiled, squeezing back. To them, we looked like lovesick fools, if they only knew. A stunningly beautiful woman, who could only be Liam's mother, stepped forward from the clan behind her.
Liam, put some room between you and the poor girl. We are Catholic, for goodness sake.
She pulled me into a tight hug, and I knew where Neil got it from. These people need to stop touching me. Mrs. Callahan, it's such a pleasure to meet you. Liam could not stop ranting and raving about you, I said as politely as possible.
Please, call me Evelyn, my sweetheart.
She smiled brighter than the sun.
You have no idea how long I've waited to meet you. And no wonder your father hid you away. You're so beautiful, Melody.
I dropped my head, for effect, before smiling.
Thank you, Mrs. Evelyn, but please just call me Mel.
My name doesn't fit my personality at all. I can't carry a note. She nodded with pleasure as she pulled me forward. From the corner of my eye, I saw the shocked look on Liam's face. Just because I fucking hated the role didn't mean I couldn't play it. He wasn't the only one surprised. Declan and Neil looked at me in confusion before looking at each other to make sure they weren't insane. Cedric just nodded at me with approval, looking a tad bit impressed.
Mel, these are my other two daughters. Olivia, Neil's wife.
The Malibu Barbie, with her long gold hair and bright blue eyes, glared at me, but shook my hand, giving it a tight squeeze.
Wow, you're so beautiful, I said, smiling. Her eyes lit up like she had found the true meaning of Christmas.
Thanks, she said.
Next was Caroline, the rather tall, chocolate-skinned woman, with a wide smile on her face.
Hi, I'm Caroline. I am glad to finally meet you.
She couldn't contain herself from pulling me into yet another hug.
What the hell was up with these damn people?
Oh my, Italian silk. Very nice.
She grinned when she pulled back and said,
Oh my God, and the shoes. There is a walk-heel-thon for charity on Saturday. You should join me.
She wants me to ruin my shoes for charity?
Hi, Caroline. I smiled at her. Everyone is so nice. Thank you for welcoming me into your home. You have no idea how nervous I've been. I heard Neil hold back a cough. Caroline grabbed onto my free arm while Olivia just smiled, clearly finding no threat in me whatsoever. Just like the rest of them.
Come, Melody. We'll make sure the rest of the family doesn't overwhelm you too much.
Evelyn smiled, leading me to the manor. It was the exact opposite of my home, sadly. Callahan Manor was a modern-day fortress. Beyond the cream marble floors that stretched for as far as the eye could see, the double grand staircases framed with black iron and the engraved French wooden doors, there was nothing but 46,000 square feet of illegal activity. There were no statues, barely any plants, and only modern paintings. Everything was simple, crisp, and clean. I wanted to puke. For 85 million, I expected more.
I'm sorry.
I paused, her words only now catching up to me. The rest of the family?
Liam wanted to make sure you weren't overwhelmed by too many new faces at your wedding on Sunday. So he thought it would be best to have you meet everyone now.
Olivia smiled. They all smiled as if they were talking about 5 or 10 people. But I knew the Callahan clan considered between 90 to 100 people their family. My Italian line was almost gone. I didn't deal with that many people anywhere, with the exception of my men. Turning around, Liam was grinning like a fucking cat with a ball of yarn. And I knew then I should have killed him in my basement. He winked, and I was tempted to lose my cool, but I wouldn't give him the pleasure. If they are as welcoming as you all have been, I think I can make it. But please don't leave me completely alone. I really wouldn't want to insult anyone. Coraline smiled, again with the fucking smiles.
Mel, you're family. We wouldn't throw you to the wolves without giving you a spear.
Please give me a fucking spear. I knew whose heart I wanted to throw it through. I allowed them to pull me away farther down the boring halls and out of a set of large French doors, which opened to a large grass lawn, now covered in white tents. At least 100 people sat, drinking, laughing, and stuffing their faces with food. Music roared from an old Irish band staged by the trees, and when I say old, I mean old. With full-length white beards, they played their handcrafted instruments for the crowd. For the love of God.
Don't be nervous,
Evelyn said.
You're young and beautiful. They already love you. And those who don't will have to, because you're Liam's.
I'm my fucking own, I wanted to yell at her. And I wasn't nervous. I was pissed. I wanted to play whack-a-mole with all these motherfuckers' heads. But instead, I just smiled and walked outside.
Everyone, this is Melody, Liam's fiancé,
Caroline yelled at the top of her lungs. They all stopped their dancing, singing, and drinking as if they wanted the world to know it wasn't just a fucking Irish stereotype, to stare at me. Then they raised their mugs and screamed,
"Cheers!"
I don't need this shit. But I had a part to play, so I grinned.
"Slanthe!"
Everyone shouted with joy. I was motherfucking in with the Irish clan. At least the drunk ones with dicks. The girls would be harder. I could already tell from their glares. Maybe I could tell them they were pretty and try not to hold their faces underwater.
"Hi, Melody!"
A group of young kids ran up to me, speaking with strong Irish accents. If I hadn't known better, I would have thought that they were drunk as well. But even the Irish couldn't be that crazy. Crouching down to them, I smiled.
"Giaguich Alan Lanu."
Their grins almost split their faces as they began to speak full-on Irish. Liam must have been following me, because he was being congratulated by some other male drunks. He looked surprised that I knew Irish. But he was a chauvinistic pig who thought all I did was paint my toenails and shop. Of course I spoke Irish. My father had me learn the moment that contract was formed. As the children pulled me towards a corner of the massive garden, each dancing around me, I pretended not to notice the women glaring at me. I would speak with them later, but now I needed to make myself look like a fucking saint. I took my shoes off and danced along with the kids, singing their Irish songs and even spinning some of them around. It even made me laugh. Don't get me wrong. I like kids. Kind of, sort of. I was just sure they were annoying as fuck if you spent too much time with them. But I needed them today, so I danced. When I finally stopped, Coraline handed me a glass of water. I wanted wine. My wine.
"They all love you," Coraline grinned. "A few men even cursed Liam for finding you first."
"Just smile and drink, Mel."
"Oh, we're going to have a garden party for you tomorrow. For all us girls."
Evelyn's eyes shined with joy.
"Everyone is dying to meet you."
I would rather have everyone just dying.
"I can't wait,"
I said, but they didn't even notice I was lying. Glancing around, I realized then that all the Callahan men were gone. "Where is Liam?" I was ready to break the glass in my hands. Olivia and Caroline frowned, but Evelyn held her strong demeanor. She turned her back to the guests to stand in front of me.
"Melody, don't worry. I know you're aware of what our men do. But believe that they're safe. They often use parties like this one to cover up something else. We try not to get involved and know as little as possible.
My son would never want to endanger your well-being." Evelyn's face became serious before relaxing into a carefree smile once again. I nodded, trying my best to stay calm, but as my gaze landed on Fidel and Monty near the doors, looking scared for their lives, I knew someone was going to die tonight.
Excuse me.
Fidel and Monty stiffened, waiting until I was before them to speak.
Flight 735 just exploded over the Atlantic Ocean. Death toll is 192. 87 of them were Valero, who were smuggling drugs in their seats.
Fidel said. The glass shattered in my hand, but I didn't feel it. Even as the blood dripped from my fingers, I couldn't feel it. Walking calmly into the house, I moved straight to the foyer. I had gotten blueprints of the whole place years ago and noticed there was space left out. It didn't take genius to realize they were hiding something behind a fake wall, and that the rather large Jackson Pollock hanging on the faux wall really had to be a door. Bloody hand raised, I waited for Fidel to hand me a gun.
"We are outnumbered, ma'am,"
he said instead, and I simply shifted my gaze to him. Today was not the fucking day. Monty handed me the semi-automatic he always had strapped to his leg. "Fidel, stay out here. I wouldn't want you to get hurt." I snapped before shooting right through the wall. Neither Monty nor I stopped, not even when the painting, tattered and unrecognizable, crumbled to the ground. The wall blew apart bit by fucking bit until the door bounced open. When it released, I stepped in. There stood the rats, all drawn and panicked, with the news playing in the background. My eyes met Declan's, who looked white as a sheet, then Neil, who was trying his best to stop the bleeding in his arm. Next was Cedric, who didn't seem surprised it was me. In fact, he was the only one wearing a bulletproof jacket underneath his suit. If he hadn't been, the bullet hole in his tie would have killed him. The biggest rat of them all, who must have had a fucking guardian angel in his pocket, because he was perfectly fine, was furious. "Tell me it wasn't fucking you and you still get to come to the motherfucking wedding, sweetheart," I said, still calm as ever, ready to start shooting again. I should have worn the white heels.
Eight. The facts of a person's life will, like murder, come out. Norman Sherry. Liam, your fiancée is... Neil stopped talking, taking her in through the window as she laughed and danced with the children. A part of me wanted to run over there and save their lives. The beautiful woman with the kind smile, laugh and blushing face was just an illusion. They were dancing with a fucking lion, a snake in the grass. "She is a master of fucking disguise," I hissed angrily. I would have enjoyed watching her dance and smile and sing off-key if I hadn't known better. If there wasn't a bullet hole in my fucking thigh, I would have been tempted to think myself lucky. The woman before us now was the woman I was expecting, the one I wanted, and it pissed me off to no end because she didn't exist. This party was supposed to make her uncomfortable, but she was playing every last one of her family like fools. She has them all eaten right out of her hands. "She's a master," Neil said, looking at her in wonder and awe. "Neil, I will shoot you in front of Olivia and then give her the gun to shoot you again if you don't stop staring at my fiancée like she's the fucking Virgin Mary." I knocked back the brandy in my hand. I hated her for this. For once again making me realize she could play this game. The game of murder and lies. Like a motherfucking pro. "Don't take your anger out on me. You're the one who fucked it up. If you had just..." "Shut the fuck up, Neil, or I swear to God." I gripped the glass in my hand so damn tight it almost broke. "Go do your bloody job. I want that plane in ashes in 3 minutes. He didn't say anything more, instead leaving to meet with Declan along with the rest of our men while I watched my soon-to-be wife walk on fucking water. The moment we had stepped out of the car, she had transformed into this delicate little bird. The melody I met the day before, and the Mel she announced herself as to my mother, were two very different women. But she drew them in like moths to the flame. She was so fucking beautiful and non-threatening when she met everyone that for a split second I forgot. Had she been this way when I first met her, I would have dazzled her and charmed her while we were making love on my bed. I would have taken pleasure in making her whole body blush, keeping her safely tucked away. If only my life were that fucking easy.
"Sir, we're ready."
One of my men, Eric Reese, called from behind me. Eric wasn't family, but pretty damn close. He was one of the few of my men with more than half a brain and full loyalty. The rest were in this out of fear, or for the money. Nodding, I walked through the door that led to the secret office my father had built into the walls to make sure no one would accidentally find it. The room was filled with monitors and maps, all focused on where the inbound airplane would be. "Are you sure you want to do this, Liam?" my father asked as he stared at the dot indicating the plane's current position. "It would be crossing into American water soon."
"It's fucking brilliant," Declan said, waiting excitedly. "The Valero will never see it coming."
"I wish I could see Vance's fucking face, man." Neil grinned. "This is gonna set him back a fortune." Eric nodded.
"You should send him a wedding invite, just to sweeten the pot, mate."
They were all right, and yet my father still did not seem to approve.
"Well, fuck him then."
Vance Valero had no idea anyone knew about his secret plane and had allowed a few unlucky everyday folks to board it. He must have figured no one would be ruthless enough to kill a few innocents to get to his men on board. After today, though, it was going to cause him regret. Not only would he lose men, but he would also lose $500,000 in cocaine and heroin. That would be a bitch. The moment I saw the plane appear on one of the video monitors, I gave the go-ahead. "Do it." Declan smirked, but before he could push the button, Neil beat him to it like they were fucking kids. "I'm the fucking oldest cousin," he said before grinning like a mad fool. A moment later, there was red, orange and yellow flames filling the sky. Metal ripped from metal, ashes fell into the sea, and all I could do was revel in the greatness of it all. Sitting back in the chair my father had once claimed, I allowed myself to dream of the future for one moment. The men in the room roared in victory over our accomplishment. The Valero had been fucked by me today. This, plus our wedding announcement, would make it clear that Liam Callahan had arrived, and I planned to make them eat shit for the rest of their lives. I would control the East and the West, and once that was done, all of fucking Europe. Who said you couldn't have it all? Even Melody, through all her bitching and shooting, had come in handy. Finding the flight plans was almost too easy. She had been keeping notes on it for months and never did anything. Some fucking boss. She could have cut Vance off at the knees, but instead she did nothing just to save a few people's lives. She didn't understand. We ran the fucking mafia. We spared no one. We took what we wanted, when we wanted it, and we killed to get the job done. All those people were in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I would make sure to have my mother, or maybe Melody, open a charity in their names. Right now, Before I could even finish my thought, bullets exploded through one of the walls. They pelted us like rain, destroying anything and everything in their way. "Fuck!" Neil screamed in pain as blood poured from his arm. "Open the fucking door and blow the motherfucker away!" Declan froze just as a bullet went right past his head and embedded itself into the monitor behind him. My father fell back as a bullet connected with his chest, and Eric held onto his wrist. The rest of the men in the room scrambled to follow orders but froze when the door opened.
"Tell me it wasn't fucking you and you still get to come to the motherfucking wedding, sweetheart,"
Melody screeched, looking me dead in the eyes. "Killer. Put a bullet through her pretty fucking head and toss her off a motherfucking bridge," my mind yelled as I glared down the barrel of my fiancé's semi-automatic. I tried to stay calm. I even prayed for the strength to not lose it, but all I could see was red. Glancing over to Eric, who stood closest to her, he took charge and put a gun to the side of her head, causing her to lower her gun. "You little bitch! Have you lost your fucking mind?"
"Carrot Top," she said, still staring into my eyes. "You better pull the trigger now. You will regret it if you don't."
He glanced at me, but in a split second Melody swung around and used the butt of her gun to bash his face in, knocking him off his feet, and held her gun to his balls.
"I said you would regret it," she hissed.
She pulled back and hammered into his jewels with the butt of her gun. My father frowned, stepping forward as I reached for my gun. There comes a time when enough was fucking enough. "Miss Giovanni, I would ask that you not kill anyone in my house."
Monty, I believe the man's name was, walked forward, pointing his firearm at Eric as Melody turned to my father, gun held right at his face.
Cedric, I like you. I really do,
she said, with no emotion in her voice.
But step out of the way, or I will kill you before I kill your son.
His mother is fond of him, and I am fond of his mother, Miss Giovanni.
The motherfucker smiled, as though this bitch had not just insulted us, as if she hadn't almost killed family.
Melody, I understand your anger, and you are justified in it.
The fuck she is, I shouted, holding my gun up as well. Never in my life did I want to put someone down so fucking badly.
Liam Callahan, for the next 48 hours, I still rule. Stand down!
Once again, the blood in my veins was demanding blood be spilled, and so I shot right past her head and at Monty's arm. Melody's eyes glowed with rage, but before her bullet could hit me, my father went for her hand. He twisted her wrist and struggled with her until the gun was out of her grip and he had her arm behind her back.
Melody, listen to me,
my father said while she snarled like a damn lion.
As the head of the Callahan family, I apologize for my son's idiotic move today and the memories it must have recalled of the damage that was done to you. But I need you to breathe and walk away from this now. Not as a woman, but as a boss, to regroup and think. If you find this room, you must know where Liam's is.
He will be there momentarily, and you can speak boss to Cana Canerza.
When she nodded, he let her go, and she left with Monty, who held on to his arm, and Fidel, who hadn't moved from the destroyed wall. When she was gone, my father didn't even have to speak. He glared at our guys, and they left faster than she had, leaving me with the man who had just spit all over my victory. Once again, all I could see was red, and for the first time in my 24 years of life, I wanted my father's blood.
You embarrassed me! The relationship, this marriage, it will not work! I will burn the fucking contract so I can put a bullet in her myself!
He stepped forward, his eyes darker than a brewing storm.
You embarrassed yourself today.
Did you not think that a woman, a boss like Melody, could have easily bombed the fucking plane?
Yes, I know where you got the intel from, you fucking idiot. I checked their files too while you were busy chaining your fiancé to a pool chair.
But she didn't do it. She was weak and she didn't want to kill innocents.
I snapped back, trying my best not to point a gun in his face. He pointed at the crumbling wall which now exposed us.
Did that look like weakness to you? Are you so blinded by the thought of power that you've forgotten everything I've taught you?
I sighed deeply, dropping the gun on the table before I pulled the trigger. Everything I did today, you would have done as well.
Yes, but I would have made sure it didn't hurt my wife first.
Congratulations, you've proven to Vance and his brothers that you're just as merciless as they are. You won the pride of your men, and you pulled off a job no one will tie you to.
He snapped angrily.
But if you had heeded my words and tried to make peace with Melody instead, you would have used your access to the Giovanni files and did your homework on what happened to Melody and her mother to bring you both together in the first place.
I froze, not understanding what Aurelia Giovanni had to do with this. She had died years ago.
Think about it, then go back to her and grovel.
With those words, he left the room. Taking a seat at one of the only computers not blown to the heavens, I pulled up the very files he was bitching about, and my blood froze. March 19. Flight 307 crashes into the Atlantic Ocean. One survivor. 6-year-old Melody Nietzsche Giovanni. Fuck, I murmured to myself as I read the title. But it only got worse. Notes. According to young Melody's memory, there were 4 men on the plane who stood up mid-flight and started shooting and demanding Aurelia Giovanni, wife to the boss, show herself. Mrs. Giovanni, with the help of her bodyguard, placed Melody into one of the overhead compartments right before they were both shot and killed. The men, who were later identified by the V tattoo on their arms, were Valero.
After the death of Mrs. Giovanni, they proceeded to kill everyone on the plane.
It was due to her tears and whimpering that the men found her. Landing the plane on the surface of the sea, They filled the chambers with smoke before dragging young Melody onto an awaiting boat. Melody explained that because she was praying, they decided they would let God decide her fate and threw her back into the ocean, leaving her holding onto a piece of wreckage. As they drove away, they told her that if she survived, to join the Valero when she was older. The boss found his daughter the next morning, clinging onto one of the broken wings of the plane. The plane was torched beyond recognition, and the body of Mrs. Giovanni was never recovered. Melody was alive, but suffered from hypothermia and developed extreme acrophobia, which she has still not recovered from. With therapy, it might lessen with time. Cover up, plane crash due to engine failure. Fuck. I sighed, running my hand through my hair. Fuck, 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 mother of fucking fuck. My mind was so messed up I couldn't think straight. All I could see was a younger version of my fiancé clinging to a wing in the middle of the fucking Atlantic Ocean. In the dark. Just how I fucking left her. Fuck. My father was right. I truly needed to grovel. But even that wouldn't change things. It wouldn't be enough. Nothing would be enough. And I had nothing left to give. I had no idea I was even moving until I found myself standing outside my bedroom, dreading the thought of going in. My bedroom was my sanctuary, and now it was going to be the place of my death. But I needed to man up and deal with the consequences of my actions. Inside, she stood at the foot of my bed, dressed in all white, with a gun and a knife strapped to her thigh. She seemed to be taking it all in, from the dark reds and gold of my bed and walls, to the wooden floors, large windows, lion-skin rug, piano in the corner, and flat screen plastered on the wall. She turned around slowly, and I really wished I could hear her thoughts. It wasn't a woman-friendly room. However, it wasn't meant to be.
We had a machine on board recording their conversations. It's now somewhere in the ocean. A team and I will be getting it back.
She told me as she tried to leave the room, but I grabbed hold of her arm first. I can go, I said as she glared up at me. I should go because it's my fault. I'm sorry for everything, I...
Look who finally did a background check. If you want to come, I can't stop you.
She ripped her arm from my grasp.
You are everything I thought you would be. A child in a grown man's body. You are brash and wild, and you don't seem to get the gravity of our situation. You don't impress me, Liam Callahan. So get that poor little girl out of your head, because I'm not her.
Closing the small space between us, I glared down into her brown eyes, wanting to rip them from her oval-shaped face. I am brash. I'm wild. So says the woman who blasted her way into a private meeting, nearly killing her future in-laws. You do not know me, Giovanni. Do not be fooled by my wit and charm. It has taken all my strength not to kill you.
What wit, what charm? You're nothing but talk, and I do not need to know you, Callahan. I just need to marry you.
With that, she held her head high and left. I would not bow down. She would not bow down. The gravity of our situation was starting to eat away at me. I needed this to work. The Irish needed this to fucking work. But how the hell was I going to handle a lifetime of horror? A hot-blooded Italian boss. Step one. Accept she was a damn boss. Step two. Hide all the knives, guns, and maybe the pillows too.
Nine. One murder makes a villain. Millions, a hero. Numbers sanctify, my good fellow. Monsieur Verdot. Melody. There was something about Liam Callahan. He was immature, rowdy, and impatient. Those were just the kinder things I could think of, and yet I knew he smelled like cinnamon, spices, and apples. I had taken the time to reflect on his scent, even enjoyed it. Ugh. On top of that, I enjoyed how he looked up close, the way he flexed his muscles out of habit and cracked his knuckles when he was tense. I had noticed all of that in just 2 days. I had a whole arsenal of men under my control, and many were attractive in some way, shape, or form. And yet there was something about Liam Callahan. When he stepped out of his room, he was dressed in dark pants paired with a black and green vest with a letter C on the breast. He looked surprised to see me, as if he wasn't sure why I was there. On his arms were bruises and scars from our fight. The idiot should have treated them, but instead he had to be a man's man and leave them. "Took you long enough, Callahan. Did you need to fix your hair?" He glared at me before smirking.
"It's called sex hair for a reason. That's the only way I fix it. You done being a bitch."
Before I could respond, Fidel came down the hall.
"Ma'am, the helicopter is ready. Monty is fine, and we are ready to aid,"
he said, waiting for orders. "I already contacted Monty, and he'll tell you what to do." His eyes widened, knowing what I meant. He just lost his title as right-hand man, the fucker. "Next time, Fidel, when I tell you to fall on your sword, do it without hesitation. You waste my time and insult my intelligence with a statement like, 'We're outnumbered.' That is all." He nodded and left quickly, leaving Mr. Sexhair and me alone. Liam stared at Fidel's back with narrowed eyes, and then turned his glower on me. I cut in before he could speak again. "The helicopter is lifting us to Delaware. The flight is an hour. From there we are taking a speedboat north. The GPS is picking up the signal 15 clicks from shore. However, the Bolero are already aware of your stunt and will most likely have men in the water trying to recoup any lost drugs." Stepping forward, I made sure he understood I was not playing. "First, you see what I'm doing? Telling you every detail of this? Yeah, that's what you should have done. Second, this is my operation now. My men, so if you fuck it up, I will slit your throat and then fill you with bull—" His eyes lit up like fire before he grabbed me and threw me against the wall.
"Every moment you waste roaring at me is a moment against us, Captain Bichelot. As smart as your plan is, it would have been better to have snipers in the air. Something I thought of before I even stepped out here."
I just grinned. Even with his arm on my neck, he thought he was so fucking smart. "You are so right. Which is why I already have Neil and Antonio locked, loaded, and waiting. Anything else you assume I didn't think of? When will you get that while you've been number two for Daddy, I've been number one?" He said nothing, just glared. "You should release me, Captain Dipshit. Or lose your arm, your choice." I didn't wait, I broke free. I was tiny compared to him, so all I needed to do was drop down and roll out of his grip. He had so much to learn, and this was his time to do it. Due to the fact that I had shot up Cedric's house, the party that they had thrown in my honor had ended and everyone departed. Outside there were 4 motorcycles, 2 of which were taken by Declan and Monty, the other 2 for Liam and me. Mine white and his green and black. He looked at me as if I was a china doll and all I could do was roll my eyes before jumping on my bike and taking off as soon as one of their people opened the gate. Only a second had gone by before I saw him skyrocket past me, almost cutting me off, the sour brat. So I sped up beside him. We raced through the back streets of Chicago, the lights from the buildings up above us all blending together in a single streak. No matter how much gas I gave while weaving in and out of traffic and intersections, he was always winning. I could only get in front of him for a second before he would shoot past me out of nowhere. It was as if he was toying with me. By the time we got to the silver luxury-style helicopter parked privately at the airstrip, Declan and Monty were right behind us. Liam was already off his bike, arms crossed with a grin on his face, as if he had waited hours. The asshole. Saying nothing to him, I walked right on board to find Antonio and Neil salivating over sniper rifles like kids on Christmas morning. At least I don't have to worry about Irish and Italian feuding between them.
"I'm glad to see your loyalty is still so easily bought, brother."
Liam glared at Neil as he took a seat. Or not. Neil froze and I saw a speck of anguish go through his eyes. Liam must have seen it as well because he didn't stop whatever mental assault he was delivering. It was like he could see into his brother's soul. Can all siblings do this? "Jinx!" I said as loudly as possible. Liam, Declan, and Neil all looked around to find the person behind the name, but no one came. A second later, the helicopter's engine kicked on and a soft voice broke out over our headphones.
"Benvenuto al bordo, ma'am. I will have us to Delaware in 40.
Monty sat before me in the seat Fidel normally would be in and then turned to Liam. who also sat across from me.
Jinx is our master aviator. If it goes in the sky, he can fly it. That's his name,
Neil asked.
Jinx, I feel safer already.
Monty sneered.
If he's good enough for the boss, he's good enough for you, can he?
Antonio snickered.
Can he?
What the fuck did you just call me?
So much for no feuding. It means dog. Liam glared at me. Was he waiting for me to do something? His brother started it. Rolling my eyes, I looked to Monty, who muttered something under his breath.
Neil hunched over like the cane, focused in on his rifle.
I knew Antonio could shoot to kill in any sort of condition. The wind and the darkness of the evening wouldn't be an issue. It wasn't the first time he had done it in such conditions. However, I was testing Neil, and if he didn't pass, this would be the last time he worked closely with me, at least until he became better. I already had an idea of Declan's skills, seeing as he was the one who had hacked into my computers. I made it easy for him, but he still did it quicker than I expected.
You will be monitoring the GPS,
Liam stated, finally catching up. Monty nodded, and Liam turned to me.
Declan can hack into the surrounding frequencies and keep track. The area should be filled with paramedics, cops, and the Coast Guard,
Liam said, and in his eyes he was daring me to agree. Now of all times. Seeing as how he was being a good little boy, I would let him have his moment of dominance. Monty looked at me, and I nodded. I had planned to have Declan on the sea with me, since he was great with hand-to-hand combat as well, and we may need it. But sure, Liam could pretend he helped. Once finished, Monty stood up quickly to get out of the negative bubble created by Liam and myself. He did not say a word, but I could see Liam's mind racing.
And I could tell he didn't like me being here.
I almost wanted to tell him to get the fuck over it, but the helicopter was tense enough. Declan and Monty were focused on the four sets of laptops between them, while Antonio and Neil both kept checking their rifles. They seemed close already, since Neil threw him a pack of chewing tobacco and Antonio accepted it like it was gold.
One moment they were fighting, the next they are trading toys.
Finally, when my eyes fell back to Liam, I found him watching me. He didn't look away like most people would when caught staring. Instead, he just stared harder, as if I were a book he was trying to read, but it was in a language he didn't understand. Yes? He shook his head.
We're here.
And sure enough, the helicopter began its illegal descent on the beach.
Sir, ma'am,
Declan said, looking between us both.
We have a problem.
What? Liam and I said at the same time. Monty clicked away at his computer.
The Valero have just gotten the recorder and are heading further out to sea. They have a boat waiting.
Taking a deep breath, I pushed the button overhead. Jinx, take us! I looked over at Declan and Monty for the coordinates.
3809, -7250,
they both said quickly. Liam nodded, looking over at Antonio and Neil as the helicopter pulled up.
They'll bring it to us. Melody and I will wait on their boat. You guys will shoot from the door.
They nodded while Liam stood up and looked over to me. He was doing so well until he opened his mouth again.
Or you can shoot, and Neil and I can go.
Standing up, I glared right back at him. Give me a rifle and the bullet goes in your spine, I told him as I waited by the helicopter door. Jinx was going to have to circle around continuously. Liam stood in front of me, hand on the door handle, and just stared at me once again. Always with the staring, the creeper.
For a moment, in the midst of the storm that was in his eyes,
I saw worry. He was fucking worried about me, the fucker. This was not my first, nor would it be my last, jump out of an aircraft. He needed to grab his balls and take a shot of testosterone because I wasn't worried for shit. I just wanted this over so I could drink myself to sleep. Monty walked over to hand us parachutes, but we both shook our heads. They would only slow us down enough to be shot. We need to drop down quick and hard. Jinx, take us as low as possible, I said. Our stomachs dipped as we felt the helicopter drop. Somehow, knowing before Jinx even had to speak, Liam opened the door. In the darkness of the night, we could both see the yacht waiting below. He looked back at me, but I ignored him and pushed off the wall to jump. The moment the cold breeze hit my skin, I braced myself for the impact of the deck. When my body landed, I rolled as bullets came flying my way.
Grabbing onto my gun, I turned and shot one Russian right between his eyes, just as Liam dropped onto the shoulders of another.
There were screams and curses in Russian as Liam dove right beside me.
Come here often,
he said, chuckling, as adrenaline clearly pumped through his veins. I supposed he was no longer seeing me as a china doll in that moment, but instead as another person on his side. Finally, the dipshit. Not really. I tried not to smirk back as more Russians came shooting at us. The hospitality here is fucking shit.
You should write a strongly worded letter.
Rolling my eyes, I turned and shot a man on the top deck in the kneecap. This is more eco-friendly. Save the trees and all that shit. He grinned and then shot the man, now screaming in pain, in the head.
I was never good at recycling.
Two men came forward, one right behind Liam and another behind me. We both raised our hands as they yelled at us.
Tukavi! Vilachi!
They shouted at us. Liam smiled at me. He truly smiled for once, obviously enjoying this.
Yeah, Liam Callahan.
Ette my schneer, vitoische mjertwe.
This is my fiancé, and you two are dead. Just as the man finished, bullets went into the side of their heads, courtesy of Antonio and Neil, before the helicopter spun out of view once again. A second later, Liam's phone rang, and he placed it on speaker.
They're 4 miles away, and will be there shortly,
Declan said. Liam said nothing before hanging up as I reached down to grab their guns. Yargin or Stechkin pistol? I asked him, causing him to frown.
The Russians can't make guns for shite,
he said in disgust, and he had a point. Smiling, we began to throw the few bodies overboard as we waited for our friends. It only took a second, and by that time we had thrown the overweight drunken Russians off. The boat was silent, except for another crew as they made their way back on deck. They stumbled and laughed like fools.
Veterchovsky, Nogrtishi Yursi, Churba Pobral, Echtik Vakalish Vashal, Valera Subraya Skubitnas.
All the fucking drugs are gone, damn those cunts to hell, Vance is going to kill us. One of the men asked where their brothers were, and Liam was already on his feet.
Dead,
Liam said as he shot one in the nose and I shot the other in the eye. He screamed in pain as I walked over and patted him down for the mini-equipment. Once I had it, I shot him once more for the heck of it. I'll call the guys, I said, handing it to Liam, but once I turned around I found myself looking down the barrel of a gun. It was the man whom Liam landed on, and he had his gun pointed right at me. Before I could even move, Liam pulled me out of the way and shot the fucker in the face, but not before taking one in the arm.
Fuck it all to hell,
he said, pulling back his wounded limb. He must have left his guardian angel at home. Jinx, head in. We'll meet you on shore. We're fine, for the most part, I said before hanging up and grabbing Liam's arm. He pulled away.
I'm fine. Just wish I didn't kill the fucker so I could torture him.
You have a bullet in your arm, I glared at him. A Russian bullet, which you yourself said was shit. I'm going to take it out.
I said I was fucking fine, Melody.
Angry, I holstered my weapon before I shot him in the other arm, and then grabbed onto his wounded arm again, causing him to hiss out in pain. You are not fine, I pressed down harder. Now stop bitching and let me fix it, you asshole. I didn't allow him to speak before pulling him inside the cabin and pushing him onto the nearest bed. They must have been ready to eat, because alcohol and an array of meat, bread, and apples awaited them. Getting a napkin and a knife, I poured the alcohol over the blade and his wound before giving him the rest to drink. Hopefully the liquor would keep him quiet. He smirked at me before taking the bottle to his lips.
I think I like you as a nurse.
Glaring at him, I dug the knife into his bullet wound. You really shouldn't say stupid things to a woman with weapons. He hissed and roared in pain like a fucking baby until I got the bullet out and used the napkin as a bandage. Drink and shut up. I'll be right back, I said to him before going back out on deck. I made sure to drag and throw the bodies off the boat before setting course back to the mainland. I also called Monty to let him and Liam's brother know what happened. It took me about an hour and a half. By the time I went back to Liam, he was frozen on the bed listening to the audio from the plane he had destroyed. All either of us could hear were screams, crying, and prayers. They brought back memories I would rather forget. Walking over, I pushed stop, and he was pulled out of his trance.
I thought you were going to set the boat on autopilot,
he said, proving just how out of it he was. Grabbing another napkin, I took the old blood-soaked one off and redid the bandage. Do not take a bullet for me again. He snorted before pulling away.
No good deed goes unpunished. The correct words you're looking for are, thank you.
I pulled tighter and he winced. The baby. Thank you, but don't do it again. The last thing I need is for any of my men to think I can't handle myself.
You are so fucking ridiculous. Why must you always try to prove you're a cold-hearted bitch?
Because a cold-hearted bitch is what I need to be, I snapped back, rising in front of him. You can fuck up as many times as you want, but at the end of the day, no one will doubt you. I, on the other hand, make one mistake and it's over. Some cocky asshole like you will come over and claim I'm too soft or that I don't have the balls. I've worked too hard to backtrack now. He said nothing. He knew I was right. I didn't have time to waste proving and reproving who I was. And in a way, they would be right, because I should have blown that plane up myself. I confessed, grabbing the wine from the table and leaning back against it. If I had, I would get the credit.
You want credit?
He eyed me up and down, his green eyes picking up only the dimmest light of the cabin we now shared.
You want credit for the mass murder I committed?
Don't say it like that. We are not serial killers. We do not kill for the fun of it or to cause chaos. It's just business. Every last person we kill is for family. If we do not kill them, they kill us. It's the way of the world. It's self-defense. It's survival. If it was your life for theirs, they would kill you in a second to save themselves or their family. Everyone is ruthless. They just don't know it. You do. I do. And that is why we are on top and will remain so.
And you feel nothing?
And I feel nothing, I repeated. He looked me in the eyes and I hoped to God he understood, because I didn't know how else to explain it. It was that kind of thinking that made it easy for me to sleep at night.
Neither do I,
he said, and I believed him. I tried to move, but he grabbed onto my sides and held me in place. There was that look in his eyes, the hunger, the lust, and the caged animal dying to get out. Pulling me even closer, he pressed himself against me. Before I could speak, his lips were on mine and he was pulling at my clothes. With his one good arm, he cupped my ass and the other one cupped my breast as he rubbed himself against me. His lips hummed against my neck before he lifted me up, throwing me on the bed. He stopped for only a second to look me over, and the storm in his eyes raged worse than I had ever seen.
This is your one and only chance to tell me to stop. Ten. It takes two to make a murder. They're the barn victims, born to have their throats cut, as the cut throats are born to be hanged. Aldous Huxley. Liam. She leered and I could see the lust growing in her eyes until it reflected my own.
You better not rip my clothes.
Her brown eyes narrowed at me, and with that, every chain, lock and bolt in my mind broke loose. I grabbed her by the ankle and spread her legs until she was no less than an inch from me taking her. I could feel her become wet just from the sheer closeness of our bodies. Brushing my hand on the side of her face, then against her lips, I grabbed onto her hair and pulled it back, allowing me to latch onto her neck. Neither of us needed to speak. We knew what we wanted, and there were not enough words in the human language to express what my tongue physically could as I bit, licked and sucked on her neck. I felt like a fucking animal, but I could not stop myself. And by God's name, when she unzipped my vest and rubbed her cool hands all over my torso, I became ravenous. Pushing her back, I pulled off her top as quickly as possible, trying my best to do as she had asked and not rip the damn thing off her. However, it didn't work and I heard a small tear before the top was in shreds.
Damn it, Liam!
She yelled at me, and I stopped pushing up to stare into her deep, dark eyes, my breath on her lips. Say it again, I muttered as I grabbed her breast through her bra. I would have preferred a lace one rather than a sports bra, but a breast was a fucking breast.
Say what?
Leaning in, I kissed her lips quickly before biting her bottom one. Then I kissed her cheek before I finally got to her ear and nibbled the lobe. I was losing my mind. I could feel it. All I wanted to do was devour each and every fucking part of her. My name, I whispered in her ear, and she shivered with pleasure. Say my name again, not in anger or disgust, but as you did just now, as if I am the only man in the world who can satisfy you. Because I was. I kissed down her neck once more. However, she grabbed me by the hair and brought me back to eye level. She said not a word, just gazing up at me for a moment, before kissing me almost desperately. For once, she fucking kissed me first, and I couldn't help but think it was better than fucking heaven. Until she flipped me onto my back. She straddled my waist and stared down at me before pulling her bra off. She kissed up my chest slowly, grinding herself against my cock as it begged for release. When she reached my neck, my hands went straight to her hair, and hers went to my pants. Thank fucking Christ. Flipping her over, I pinned her hands above her head and stared down at what was now mine. Her cheeks were flushed, her nipples erect, and I bent down to suck on them, as if they were begging me to do so. She moaned loudly as she tried to wriggle her hands free.
Liam,
she said, arching towards me. Again, I demanded as I moved to the next one, my tongue circling around her areola, teasing until she did as I said. But my girl never just gave in to me. Transferring both her hands to my right one, my left travelled into her pants, not stopping until it reached its target. I could feel her and that eclipsed the pain from my arm. She was dripping for me. The moment I cupped her, my girl's back rose off the fucking bed.
You fucking bastard!
She moaned, trying to rub her legs together in forced friction that I would not let her have. Again, I demanded once more, my lips travelling from her breast down to her waist slowly. I kissed every part of her, barely rubbing her wet pussy. She wanted more, and so did I, but she had to do what I wanted. But once again, my girl wanted to make my life as difficult as possible, leaving me no other choice but to release my hold on her hands so I could pull her pants off completely. The moment my eyes saw the spring of honey begging for my tongue, I latched on, sucking and lapping up all the juices she had provided for me. She gasped, gripping onto my hair as she rubbed herself against my face.
Liam.
I pulled away only for a moment. Again? She refused, and so my finger found its way into her, and she gasped out in ecstasy. In and out, as fast and deep as possible. I pounded my fingers into her, she ground into my hand, wanting the satisfaction only my cock would give, but trying her best to make do with the three fingers I had inside her. Just as she was reaching her climax, I stopped. Her eyes narrowed at me as she breathed deeply.
You fucker!
Not yet, I whispered, stepping back to release my cock from the confines of my pants. She stared at it, and I let her just for a moment, before pulling her back to me. Before she even had time to think, I thrust deeply within her. Her back arched as she shouted in Italian. I pulled her even closer to me and went even deeper still, if such a thing could be possible. Wincing at how slowly I moved, I watched her tremble as my cock filled her. "Say my name," I told her, almost stopping altogether as my cock throbbed. I was hoping and praying she would give in so I could have my way with her. She didn't, so I thrust forward quickly. "Melody, for the love of God, just say my name." Instead, she slipped slightly away from me before wrapping her arms around my neck.
"Mel, just Mel,"
she panted. Holding onto her waist, I eased back slowly before thrusting again. "Say it, Mel." She kissed up my neck, then my ear before stopping at my lips, staring me deeply in the eyes. Hers were so dark I could see myself in them. Her breath was almost on my tongue, and I just needed to hear it.
"Liam,"
she hissed and kissed me deeply. My name was the key to opening the deepest levels of possession possible. I pushed her onto her back, causing both of us to cry out and hiss as my cock slammed into her over and over again. She moved in rhythm with me, every thrust not missing a beat. She cried out my name over and over again. Grabbing her breast, I fucked her deeper,
not even stopping when she screamed out her release.
I wasn't even close to finished. She would come at least once more before I released in her. Pulling out of her, we both cried out in protest until I flipped her over and took her, holding her waist and shoulder as I forced myself deeper.
"Fuck, Liam, harder,"
she begged.
"Faster."
And at both wishes I complied until I couldn't hold myself back any more, just as she couldn't, and we came together.
"Momornin, Mel,"
I gasped before pulling out of her and falling onto the bed. Flipping onto her back, she tried to control her breathing before speaking.
"You can only call me Mel during sex."
"Why is that?" I raised my eyebrow at her.
"You haven't earned it."
I couldn't have this. After what had just happened between us, everything had changed, whether she knew it or not, and it started with me. Grabbing onto her, I rolled over her, allowing her space so my weight would do no harm. She looked at me surprised, but said nothing. "What happened tonight will be repeated," I told her calmly, still trying to catch my breath. "You are mine, and I am yours. But for this to work, you need to stop seeing me as a goddamned enemy, and more like your husband." Her eyes narrowed.
"My husband, you say? So I'm supposed to sit back, polish your shoes, and make dinner between fucks?"
"Mel," I replied, moving down until I was at her entrance again. "I get it," I said to her before I thrust forward and buried myself into the tight place that was quickly becoming my new home.
"Do you?"
she hissed, trying to stay focused as I inserted myself deeper. "Yes," I whispered, going for her neck again. "You are not a housewife," I said, pulling out, only to slam myself in again. "You do not want to be my arm candy." Slam! She reached up for my hair. "You are a cold-blooded murderer." Slam! She moaned as sweat dropped from my chin onto her chest. "You are a boss." Slam! "You are my evolution." Slam! This time she grabbed onto my ass, trying to pull me closer.
"I'm willing to try to disregard my chauvinistic ways."
Slam! "To treat you as an equal. But you must fucking do the same for me, Mel." And with that, I thrust into her repeatedly, her body moulded with mine, her breasts pushed up against my chest. She was so fucking tight I couldn't keep my eyes open. Her nails dug into my back and her legs wrapped around my waist, pulling me closer to her. Her hands waved into mine as we entangled ourselves, rising to the highest of climaxes and crashing together. Gasping for breath, I held her tightly, my arms wrapped around her while I used her breast as a pillow. We were both silent, allowing our breathing to fill the cabin, and neither of us let go of the other.
"You see me as a boss?"
"Yes, and it annoys me because I want that title," I replied honestly, causing her to pull my hair.
"No matter how many times we fuck, Callahan, I will never just bow down to you. I will never let you rule me. I will not be your bitch to screw and command. I don't think you can handle that."
Maybe it was the sex talking, or maybe my father's words were finally beginning to sink in, and I was starting to see a new way of getting what I wanted. All of what I wanted. Rolling off her, I looked up at the wooden ceiling, not speaking for a moment as I gathered my thoughts. "In many ways, I can't," I told her. "In my mind, there will always be a chauvinist. But I will fight it. You and I both know that once we're married, our companies will be one, which means there will only be one head, for a divided house cannot stand."
"Thank you, Abraham Lincoln, but I'm not giving up my claim as boss,"
she replied, and I knew she wouldn't. She wouldn't bow to me. The only way for this to work was to do the one thing I hated to do most: share. It was so simple. It made logical sense, but I was a greedy motherfucker, and in many ways so was she. We were too fucking alike. There is one head, but also a brain within it.
"Everything we choose for the company will be thought of together in our bed, and then we bring it to the men.
We roll as one, together." She said nothing, and I allowed her to think it over as I breathed in the smell of sex. Our sex. The best fucking sex I'd ever had. Sex I never wanted to stop having.
"We won't always agree on everything,"
she whispered, and she was right. Everything we don't agree on, we fuck out. I enjoyed the thought. This is, after all, the longest interaction we've ever had without you shooting at me.
"Not yet,"
she said, sitting up. I loved how she didn't care if I saw her naked in the light. She didn't reach to cover herself. She just allowed me the pleasure of looking at her. My hands reached up to mess with a few strands of her hair. "What do you say, my Mel? We end our war and join brains and bodies to destroy any against us. We become one ruthless person instead of two."
"You can just do that?"
she asked, eyeing me skeptically.
"You can just share like that? You don't seem the type."
"Because I'm not. But when I thought of what my life would be like when I married, I thought of a woman who would handle what I do and allowed me the pleasure of confessing my sins as I took her mercilessly. I replied, looking up at such women. And now I have a woman who takes part in them as well, who enjoys it, who does not shy away from it. If I can't share it with her, who can I share it with?
My father was right. You are a sweet talker.
She frowned, and I hated the look of it, so I brushed my finger over her lips. I stared at her,